Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast brought to you by Louisville Slugger. Check them out at Slugger Nation on Instagram and Twitter. And that hasn't changed, even though they were bought today by Wilson. So that's big news in the baseball sphere. We've got all your big news in the college baseball sphere with myself, John Manuel, along with Jim Schoenert and Mike Lanana joining me here in the podcast nook. You can always tweet at us at Baseball America. You can email us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We got a question in the podcast inbox this week. So we'll take all those during the podcast. And guys, we always peg this to our top 25 rankings. And we had some changes in the top 25. Nothing at the top with LSU still holding strong. The Tigers are 21-3, go on the road. And especially impressive to me that they lost the opener to Louisville and then, to Arkansas and then just kind of stormed back and won the rest of that series. We had some change in the rest of the top 10, but we're going to start off talking about the West Coast a little bit, a little kicking it on the West side with the Pac-12. And just kind of the changes that have gone on in the rankings and in the top of the Pac-12 standings. We're 2 weeks in the Pac-12 for most of these teams. And right now you've got Cal sitting at the top of the league along with UCLA. But UCLA's played Utah, and the Utes are generally not a Pac-12 power, not in baseball anyway. They're still surviving in the Sweet 16, but not they got swept by UCLA in baseball. But Cal has not been a baseball power. They've really kind of taken some steps back since their program was virtually eliminated and then restored, and then they went to the College World Series all in the same year. Clearly took a hit recruiting-wise, as is natural when you go tell recruits we're not going to exist anymore, as has happened to Cal. But Dave Esker's gotten that team back going and that program back going, and they're off to a 5-1 start, guys. And this team's 18-5, and two of those losses were opening weekend at home to Duke, which was kind of a surprising series loss for Cal. We brought the Bears back in the rankings at 21, and Jim and Mike, well, you could start with Jim, but what prompted us to bring the Bears back in the rankings this weekend? It's been a pretty great start for them.
Well, as you said, I mean, they haven't lost a series since that series against Duke, and, you know, they beat Oregon last weekend, which was impressive, and now, so they kind of, they just kept building. I mean, you look at what they've been pretty steady all season, I should say, and they've, you know, so they've been able to keep building this momentum, and obviously the sweeping UW this weekend isn't the the cream of the crop there, but still it's a solid series win, and like we've been saying, we like their talent. I know that Chris Urseg, is that how you say it?
I think it is Lucas Urseg. Great name,
Lucas Urseg. Gets the game winning home runs on Friday and Saturday, and then they kind of came alive. Their whole offense kind of came alive on Sunday, but. Yeah, I mean we like their young talent, and they've been very consistent all season.
Yeah, Urseg has been outstanding. 6 home runs. This team has 23 home runs, Mike, offensively. And then the thing that really kind of is going to be the key for them, I think, is who's going to be their third starter? Because right now they've been leaning a lot on Dalton Jeffries, and you know, he got some Sonny Gray comparisons. I'm not even sure that he pitched this weekend. Got to double check my box scores, but their pitching depth has been the question, and yet this weekend they pitched really well against Washington. Do you see some signs that Cal's they got some staying power after this 18-5 start? You think?
I think they do. I mean, I think beating Oregon last weekend was good for them, and like you said, they do have a lot of power in that lineup. I love that they have a Chris Paul in their lineup. I don't know if he's a State Farm agent or not, but he's just behind Urseg with 5 home runs. He's added some pop there, and Brett Cumberland has 4,
and Andrew Knapp. And they've got depth of power in their lineup, not just Lucas Urseg.
Yeah,
I like the fact that this team does have some depth of that in their lineup, and it's really, I think, a matter of can they develop bullpen depth. Just with the scout I was texting with earlier this year, those are the two guys that he really pointed out to me as Jeffries and Urseg as potential stars on this roster. And the other thing that kind of comes up is that it's hard to predict who the guys are going to be coming out of high school and are going to star in college. We have a decent idea about it, but I don't think people thought Dalton Jeffries was going to go be this frontline guy, or that Lucas Urseg was going to be able to do it both ways, but especially be a three-hole hitter as a sophomore, just like we talked about with Alex Lang at LSU. Like, do we know Alex Lang would step into the LSU rotation? We saw they were enthused about it, but did you really think that he'd go in there and step in from day one and be one of the best pitchers in the SEC? I just don't think that's easy to forecast, and we definitely try to forecast. I don't think we knew that. I think it's similar with USC, guys. I think we knew that USC, we had them in the field of 64 coming into the year. They've had good recruiting classes come in the last couple of seasons. So we knew that Dan Hubbs was building this team and this program back up. But guys, I don't think we saw them being number eight. And they haven't played the level of competition that they started off when we jumped them into the rankings in the Dodgertown Classic. But guys, they just keep on winning and remain number eight in our rankings. USC 8, UCLA 9, those two teams really haven't done anything to kind of change our minds. But the Trojans have shown some staying power, I guess, Mike, from when you saw them in Los Angeles, and they've kept performing at a fairly high level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really impressed when I saw them out in the Dodgertown Classic, and I was talking with a scout earlier who's been impressed by what he's seen out of them. He really likes Garrett Stubbs, a very athletic catcher that they have, a guy who's really hard to compare to anyone. He has 15 stolen bases this year. He's batting .430. He's hitting in the top of the order, and he's been a force for them. And they've had some experienced guys like Dante Flores, a guy who's always had potential but hasn't lived up to it. A guy like Timmy Robinson in the middle of the order. Both of those guys have been swinging the bat well. And then you have some contributions in the pitching staff. You have Mitch Hart, their Sunday starter, who's been very good for them. He had last weekend threw 5 no-hit innings. And Brent Wheely's been great at the top of the rotation. Kyle Toomey looks like he's getting back on track. So it's a team that has depth, and I think it is a team that does have staying power just because of the balance it has between veteran players and some youth as well, and a lot of athleticism in that lineup.
So that always gives you a little just wiggle room. You can make mistakes when athleticism gives you the opportunity to make up for it. You know, you can break wrong on a ball in the outfield if you've got the speed to overcome it, those kind of things. It just feels like that USC has that, and that's just something that they didn't have before under Chad Kruder and have been lacking. And it's amazing to me that UCLA is and USC are back-to-back in our rankings, Jim, just because I just see these programs as opposites, and they obviously have this link together with, John Savage was an assistant coach at USC the last time they won a national championship in 1998. And has obviously won a national championship as head coach at UCLA, but these programs really haven't been good at the same time in a long time, really, since UCLA was really good in the late 90s with their 97 team that went to Omaha. And they had some pro talent, the Garrett Atkinses and Chase Utleys of the world. But in terms of the program being good, it seems like as soon as USC got bad, UCLA got good. I don't think those two things are I think those are related. I think UCLA... got good at the expense of the Trojans. If you had to pick one, I mean, right now UCLA has the better conference record in the Pac-12. Going forward, which of these teams do you like better? I mean, you just did the Field of 64 projection last weekend. I think you had UCLA as a top eight national seed, USC, right?
Mm, yeah, it's. I mean, I liked. I like both their chances to. They both have a chance to get into that top eight. It's not. It's not a done deal by any means for either side, and obviously they still have to play each other again, and they'll have a regular series. But the Bruins, I kind of gave the Bruins the benefit of the doubt. I mean, they're the team that's been there and done it before. This is all kind of new for the Trojans, relative for the players anyway. But obviously UCLA's offense kind of caught fire again this weekend. We saw that they kind of tailed off when they started facing good arms in the Dodgertown and then the last couple weeks. But
they're not just playing Hofstra anymore.
Yeah, not playing the Hofstra, but the Trojans. I do really like the Trojans' upside. Definitely see them. They seem like they're very deep, talented. They could definitely end up in that top eight. We'll see.
If they don't, Jim, it feels like their schedule is what's going to hold them back.
They're
Towson,
early.
Oakland, Florida.
Yeah, that's not going to help them. You're a Pac-12 team. They'll have plenty of chances to get quality wins. It won't help them certainly, but it's not gonna. That alone won't kill them.
I feel we'll really find out a little bit more about them the next two weekends. This is the first of 3 weekends in a row on the road for them, and they pass one road test at Cal Poly. But certainly the Mustangs are just not the team that we kind of thought they would be coming into the year. Whether it's injuries or whatever, they just haven't caught that spark yet. Even with Mark Mathias back in the lineup.
I think one of the other things we've talked about with the Big West being kind of down is that there aren't going to be the race for hosting and stuff on the West Coast is going to be
a Pac-12.
It's going to be Pac-12 centric. Yeah. I mean, and Oregon's kind of dropped off the last couple of weeks, so now you're really looking at the two SoCal teams and Arizona State as the real kind of getting the jump on everybody for that. So I mean, it's going to be I mean, they could definitely both end up there. Probably a strong chance to both end up hosting. I mean, they could both end up getting national seeds. I mean, it's obviously not not impossible.
Yeah, you definitely, and the attendance at Dodger Town is a good sign for if both teams were strong enough to be in the hosting discussion. You wouldn't normally think that they'd both host just because of the geography, Jim, but I do think the attendance was strong enough at Dodger Town to make that more of a possibility. And then you've got Cal kind of that doesn't have lights at Evans Diamond, and the ballpark was part of the reason why they were talking about dropping the program in the first place. And then you have Oregon and Oregon State. We still have Oregon ranked. Mm-hmm. We don't have the Beavers ranked yet. They certainly are making their case. Mm-hmm. They keep on getting better, guys. And Oregon State, I mean, I guess, Jim, you talked to Pat Casey. Mm-hmm. So this team, you just have to feel the arrows pointing up when they're this young, as young as they are, and they keep on there's evidence they keep getting better. They've got the Bruins in a couple weeks coming up, and that's going to be a home series for Oregon State. So that's kind of a chance that Oregon State has to make a statement. That'll be their Pac-12 rejoin after beating Wazoo and then losing the series at Arizona State last week. Mm-hmm. It feels like Oregon State's probably the team that might be they might have the best resume, guys, of a team that's not in the top 25. I think they probably do, actually.
Yeah, probably. I think it was just a matter of we only had two spots open up this week, and there was just kind of had some teams ahead of them in the pecking order. But yeah, I mean, it's they have to go to UCLA next week.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that was one of the things Pat Casey talked about. Is their schedule is very. I think they get all the best teams on the road, with the exception of they host USC. Other than that, they have to. So they went to Arizona State. They have to go to UCLA and Oregon. And they have to go to Stanford also. They do get Cal at home. But for the most part, I mean, they got a lot of tough road series. And obviously there's those next two. They get Cal Poly at home this week. But then they're at UCLA and at Oregon. So we'll see. I mean, obviously they got a lot of young talent, a lot of kind of unknowns coming into the year. Other than you have Andrew Moore back. But other than that, it's kind of a lot of new faces they've kind of had to piece together. But obviously... I mean, KJ Harrison's just been unbelievable. I think he's up to, what, 7 home runs now as a freshman,
right.
Freshman catcher. I mean, we'll see. I mean, we'll see if he, you know, hits a wall at some point. It's possible, you know, he's doing all this catching, so it's possible. But obviously, he's been outstanding. You know, Jeff Hendricks has been really good. And touched on more, but and then Drew Rasmussen throws the perfect game,
right,
over the weekend. He's a guy who was not in their rotation to the start of the year. They kind of had him in the bullpen, then they kind of. You know, they had somebody get hurt, so they kind of had to try some guys out, and eventually they settled on Rasmussen, and he's just been outstanding. Throws, you know, this guy's got a power arm, you know, power slider, and he's just been, you know, he goes out and dominates the other day, and he's been really good all year.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who was their projected closer coming into the year, Mike, and now here's 5 weeks in, he's throwing a perfect game. It's kind of impressive to see a freshman like that played such a prominent role, but they kind of expected that. I'm segueing on the freshman tip here. You were in Charlottesville this weekend. We're going to move across the country to the ACC. Mm-hmm. That's another team in Virginia that expected to use a lot of freshmen this year. I don't think they expected to rely on them as heavily as they've had to. Mm-hmm. And was as high as number 3 in the rankings. What were they, number 4 in our preseason rankings?
Yeah, they're number 4.
And loses a series at home this weekend to Florida State, and hasn't played a ton of home games. I think they've lost 3 of the 4 home games they played, maybe 3 of the 5 home games they've played now. Got swept last weekend at Virginia Tech. Virginia's lost 2 series in ACC play. I don't know how often they lose back-to-back series in ACC play in the Brian O'Connor era. It's rare.
I think it's the first time since 2008.
Wow, that's a long time. I mean, that's the 7th season since then. So,
yeah.
Pretty impressive track record of their consistency. How is this freshman-laden team? It feels like they've kind of, to use a sports cliche, they've been punched in the mouth a little bit, and they haven't quite responded to it yet.
Well, the thing about Virginia right now is, I think the best way to describe them is they're out of sync. I think, obviously, early on in this season, that the pitching was ahead of the offense. They have a lot of pitching depth. Obviously, you look at Kirby, Brandon Waddell, and Connor Jones in the weekend rotation, and Spores in the bullpen. You know, you're going to expect them to be a good pitching team. They just didn't have the offense with the little young lineup, starting 5 freshmen at times. This weekend, they finally got some offense.
Yeah.
And they just didn't have the pitching, and they really did not have the pitching. I did the math, and I had to double and triple check it because I just couldn't believe it, but they walked 34 batters this weekend.
No way.
34 batters.
Oi.
in games started by Nathan Kirby, Connor Jones, and Brandon Wandell, Kirby had
none of them freshmen.
Yeah, Kirby had 4 walks, Jones had 6 walks, Waddell had 5 walks, and he hit 3 guys too. He didn't have out of the 3 of them, he had the worst command on the 3 days. Kirby was able to at least put together a quality start. The other two hit some bumps along the way, but it was just it was a walkathon. A lot of people called it a walkathon, and it really was. You know, it was very uncharacteristic for Virginia, and it was very characteristic for Florida State because they lead the country in walks, and that's something they've led the country in before. And
that's what they do. That's how they go. And it looks like there were great crowds. I mean, what was the end of the game like Saturday night when it was 12-10 and you're 4 hours in? Were all 4,000 people still there, or did they start to trickle out?
Some people trickled out, but there's still a good number of people there. Definitely more than there were Sunday when it was 13-1.
After another five-run seventh inning for Florida State, which seemed like that was their rule of thumb this weekend. Just it's impressive to see Florida State just have that consistent approach. Mm-hmm. And then when people are on base, DJ Stewart can drive them in with anybody. I mean, you've seen a decent amount of good teams this year. You saw all the Dodgertown teams. You've seen some teams around here. You saw a lot of offense this week with the Davidson North Carolina game you were at as well.
Quite a bit, yeah.
How much did DJ Stewart stand out among the crowd? Was that the best weekend you've seen a guy have all year?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be writing a little bit about DJ coming up soon for 3 Strikes. It was an impressive weekend. The thing about DJ is he's getting nothing to hit. You can watch, you know, you watch Virginia pitchers, every count it's 3-0. Breaking balls way outside. He's getting absolutely nothing to hit.
It was impressive that you showed the vine you had of Kirby striking him out. It was like, no duh, he's going to swing at a fastball. Because he was like, oh my God, a fastball.
Right.
I must swing. So it was good pitching by Nathan Kirby that you show him that fastball out of the zone, you try to get him to chase, and it did in that instance.
Right.
But it seems like there were other opportunities for him in the weekend that weren't delivered by Nathan Kirby.
Right, yeah. Well, he hit 3 home runs between Saturday and Sunday, so when he did get pitches to hit, he hit them. And one thing that was interesting, and I got a vine of this too, because I get vines of everything.
Except his grand slam.
I got his grand slam. There was another grand slam that I missed.
Okay.
But I did get his grand slam. But 2 pitches before the grand slam, there was a fastball he got right down the middle that he swung out of his shoes and completely missed it. He swung by it. And I talked to him after the game about it. And he's like, yeah, I was just trying to hit the ball 500 feet. and he's like, you know, it's just one of the things I've been working on is making adjustments, you know, in between at-bats, during games, in between pitches. So he made an adjustment. And 2 pitches later, he goes opposite field, hits a grand slam, waits on the ball, and takes it over the left field wall. And, you know, he really impressed me this weekend. There's no question.
There's not a lot of guys in this year's draft class who are stepping forward. You know, all the work I did last weekend was on high school pitchers getting hurt. You know, Brady Aiken, Colby Allard. It's getting tiresome to write about top draft guys who keep falling. I mean, the only college guy who's really jumped up the draft board that I can tell is Dylan Tate. I'm not saying other guys aren't going to go high. You know, a lot of the college shortstops, it's a great college class. We could wax the rest of the day about Kyle Holder if I wanted to, but I choose not to. But that's my choice. It's my free will being exercised. But DJ Stewart says that he's one of the guys.
Yeah.
I don't know where you necessarily play him because he doesn't look like a big league left fielder.
Yeah.
But the guy's going to hit, and he has track record for hitting. And that summer with Team USA last year, I thought was really going to kind of knock him back a little bit in the draft. But you know, I've always also been one of these guys who I think teams get a little overheated about the Cape Cod League. I want to see the larger sample size. I feel like the Cape or Team USA are always too small of a sample for people to get overheated about. And you know, I think that we're seeing – I think you'll learn more about DJ Stewart with what you're talking about. From pitch to pitch and at bat to at bat, he's been game planned. Virginia's coaches have seen him for 3 years. They've got tons of video on him if they need it. And that's a coaching staff that knows how to coach pitching. They've been in the top 10 in ERA, top 20 in ERA for 11 years at Virginia. So if they can't pitch to him, that just tells you how hard it is to pitch to this guy. And I was very impressed that as much as Virginia usually doesn't let the other team's best guy beat them, he beat them back-to-back games. And that just tells you, I think, a lot about DJ Stewart. It does tell you a little bit about where Virginia stands right now. They're not executing the way they want to. But I was very impressed that DJ Stewart just kind of took him behind the woodshed himself this weekend.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. And one thing I'll say about him too, I mean, obviously he is a big guy, you know, 6'2", 230 is what he's listed at on their roster, but he does run well for his size.
He was a good running back in high school. I forget the high school in the Jacksonville area, but I just remember Mike Bell when they were recruiting him and they had him sign as a high school senior. Mm-hmm. That was the most important recruit for them was getting DJ Stewart to school. Mm-hmm. They lost some good talent in that recruiting class, if memory serves, but they were very keen on getting DJ Stewart to class because of his combination of physicality and some athleticism. So he may not be the twitchiest guy in the world, but I think that he's got some deceptive athleticism. And, you know, Florida State's had players like that before. Buster Posey, this guy's not Buster Posey, but that was always the knock on Buster Posey was the athleticism. And the fact that you also mentioned opposite field, that's always been a knock on Florida State players. The short porch and right field, a lot of their players get penalized by pro scouts for their power numbers for doing it at that ballpark, and the fact that he showed he could hit with power to all fields at a big pitcher's park like Davenport Field, that's a big sign for Florida State and for DJ Stewart. Mm-hmm. We moved the Seminoles into our top 10 this week at number 10. They're just ahead of Arizona State. I navigated away from the Pac-12 prematurely, guys. We do have Arizona State at 11, and one thing I wanted to throw out, Jim, as you were doing your field of 64. One of the things I was looking at was strength of schedule, mm-hmm. and Arizona State's strength of schedule is very much in contrast to USC's. Not knocking the Trojans necessarily, but Arizona State has all those Big 12 games we talked about. They won 3 out of 4 against Oklahoma and Oklahoma State when they played them. They lost a series to TCU, but they did play a team that's our number 5 team in our rankings, and there's TCU coming off its first loss to Oklahoma State in league play. They've got that series win against Long Beach State. They've got a series win against Oregon State. They beat Oregon this weekend. Just feels like Arizona State's been very consistent. I don't feel like they're talented enough to just dominate some of these other teams and impose their will and get a sweep. But it feels like that's a team that's good enough to beat anybody.
Yeah, that was kind of when I was speaking with Tracy Smith before the season, they have a lot of guys back. It's pretty much the whole same team they had last year. I mean, Lilac and Kellogg in the rotation, and then Woodmancy and all these guys in the lineup. So it's a lot of the same cast. But it's kind of not. You kind of talking about it's a good team. They're not really as athletic as he wants them to be when 2-3 years from now. But I mean, it's an experienced team. They can all hit. Obviously they got those two guys in the rotation. Obviously, Seth Martinez has kind of moved to the front of the rotation, and they're a well-rounded team. Woodmancy's really had a breakout season so far. He's a physical guy that it's kind of probably going to shoot up the boards for next year possibly. But just look at what they've done. I mean, we talked about obviously beating Oklahoma State and Oklahoma very competitive with TCU. Take 2 out of 3 from Long Beach. Obviously that's not bad. And obviously now back-to-back series wins against the Oregon teams. I mean, they really have had no let up in the schedule. I mean, the worst, other than losing one game to Cal State Bakersfield, they really have not had any kind of letdown. I mean, they played Purdue one game, but I mean, other than that, they really have not given themselves any breaks. They'll get one in a couple weeks. They get to play Utah, but other than that, I mean, it's
their next 7 games are against teams with losing records. I mean, Stanford is Stanford, mm-hmm. but they also don't have Cal Quantrill right now, and they are 9-11. So it's a little bit of a softer part of their schedule. Even though they'll eventually have to go on the road to Cal, they're going to have to go on the road to UW, they're going to finish on the road at USC. But it feels like Arizona State, with its strong schedule, the fact they've weathered that strong schedule, I just feel like this is a team that is poised to be not just a regional host, they're going to be in that top 8 national seed conversation just because of the strength of schedule.
Yeah, those top 3 teams in the Pac-12 are going to be elbowing each other all the whole second half for that.
I do like the depth of the Pac-12 decently as a league. I feel like there are a couple teams that are a little bit better than we thought. Mm-hmm. The SEC, we talked about coming into the podcast, guys, very top-heavy league. We talked about it last week how 5 of our top 6 teams were SEC teams. We're down to 4 of those this week with LSU, Vandy, A&M, and Florida. But our top 4 teams, all from the Southeastern Conference, mm-hmm. with South Carolina dropping down to 12, I guess, Mike, what stood out to you in the SEC weekend this weekend? I guess to me, I'll say just Texas A&M. Right. I know they lost a game, but
what's wrong with them?
You're allowed to lose one. just keep on keeping on. That impresses me the most. And then I already mentioned LSU. Just they really had the bats working in the games that I saw against Arkansas. And Arkansas usually pitches pretty well. And those were decent arms out there on the mound for Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed with the way LSU swung the bat this weekend. What stood out to you in the SEC this weekend?
Right. Well, I mean, both of those teams, both LSU and Texas A&M, obviously very good teams. No, there's no question. Alex Lane was great yet again. You know, it's looking more and more like he is a dude. He's been pitching like a dude. You know, if he looks like a dude, pitches like a dude, I think he is a dude.
I think it's a dude. We can call him a dude.
He's a dude. You know, Texas A&M, obviously they lost for the first time, but Grayson Long was great again for them. And, you know, they've been able to pitch despite losing Stubblefield, despite, you know, not having AJ Minter, which is great for them. And I mean, the thing that was most surprising to me, though, the thing that stood out most to me was South Carolina, the weekend that they had, and losing 2 out of 3 to Missouri. And I mean, Missouri's played well this year, but I don't know. You look at South Carolina's schedule, and they haven't really challenged themselves all that much, which they don't usually do in the early going. But
right.
It's just, at some point, they're going to have to beat somebody, you know? They're going to have to, you know, show something.
I'm with you. I'm a little bit surprised, Jim, that South Carolina, they really haven't, I'm not sure what the identity of this team is yet. Mm-hmm. They've pitched quite well in league play, and they have a 2.47 ERA, but, you know, this weekend, lost a couple of close games. And offensively, this team's hitting, you know, they're below average in the SEC. They're one of the bottom half teams in the league and runs scored and in batting average, and it's just not a team with a lot of power. And I don't feel like it's a team that really has a ton of speed yet either, at least not speed that's played. I'm not sure what, you know, I think we knew the last 3 years kind of this team's offense was kind of revolve around that junior class that from last year, Grayson Griners and Joey Pancakes and Tanner Englishes. And I'm not sure someone has stepped forward to kind of make this team their own for South Carolina. I feel like the identity of the team, at least in the lineup, I feel like the identity of the team is really on the pitching staff with Will Crow and Jack Weinkoop.
Yeah, I think they're kind of still kind of waiting for you know, Max Strock hasn't gotten going yet. I mean, he's hitting 247. You expect a lot more out of him. DC Arendis is another guy they like. Come into the year, he's kind of struggled. And I mean, Alex Dacino obviously has been. He's lived up to it. He's already got 4 home runs, hitting around 300. Kyle Martin's been outstanding. You know, L.A. Caldwell is leading him in hitting. He's over 400. But, I mean, yeah, it's after that, it falls off pretty quickly. So, I mean, they have not been getting the kind of production you thought they might with the guys they had coming back. But in the rotation, you know, Weinkoop is, you know, he's a good college pitcher. I mean, he's been he's been pretty steady. Will Crow, we've talked about him a few times. We like him a lot. That's a, you know, great arm. Kind of expected him to move up to that Friday role, and he's really taken it. But, yeah, I mean, with Missouri, I mean, I spoke to Tim Jamison just now, working on something for Three Strikes, and you know, from their perspective, I mean, they've, you know, they haven't exactly played the world's toughest schedule, but I've seen that they did get swept at home by Wisconsin Milwaukee, which kind of digs them a bit. But
tough though, it's really hard to know, you know, what kind of team Missouri is.
Missouri.
Yeah, exactly. But, I always appreciate that reference. I prefer to call them Missouri, but to me,
should call them Mizzou.
That's what they want. I'm not on the branding. I'm just not on the branding, as I think everybody knows. It's not my shtick. We get a lot of complaints about that on the top 25. We're going to call them Central Florida on first reference because not everybody knows who UCF is. And I suppose the LSU, we should probably hear the LSU. They're closer to UCLA. Mm-hmm. It's a national big-time program. Mm-hmm. UCF, I just mean the sports, the whole thing, not just the baseball. So I'm not trying to cast any aspersions on UCF, but I just don't think anybody knows who that is nationally. You know, LSU's brand is a bit stronger. UCLA is the only team that we do that for. But Mizzou, they're Missouri. I'm sorry, yeah. I can't call them Mizzou. But they, you know, they swept the series at Georgia last weekend. I guess we'll really find out more when they have this Big 12 rivalry with Texas A&M coming up. But I, you know, Jim, it's hard to rank a team that's been swept at home by Milwaukee.
It is. It's the same. There's the San Diego, the USD problem with losing to Morehead State. But yeah, I mean, Mizzou, I mean, they've got a whole new rotation. You know, they've got a few new guys in the lineup, and Tim Jamison just talked about how it's, you know, they've just got a lot more confidence this year. I think they've won 5 or 6 one-run games, and they win a couple of those over the weekend. I think on Saturday they either come from behind in the bottom of the 10th to win that game. They, you know, get a walk-off hit against Taylor Widener, I believe. And I mean, that's they're definitely building some confidence there. I mean, they're 5-1 in the conference. They sweep a road series at Georgia. So I mean, they've definitely kind of, I don't know if we could say they've turned a corner, but they're definitely not not the bottom feeder that they were last year. They're definitely gonna, you know, you're not, when you see them on your schedule, you can't just say, okay, we're gonna sweep that series. I mean, it's, you're gonna have to, you know, you're gonna have to bring your A game to, if you're gonna win that series. I mean, it's like we've talked about. I mean, there are no breaks in the SEC. Missouri might have been that one break last year, but now now even that little loophole is closed.
I think that's it. And I think the other thing for South Carolina, just getting back to them, is, you know, this is a team that is really built right now for low scoring games. That is stat. The great Andrew Kiddick, their sports information guy for baseball. This team's 18-2 and allowing 5 runs or less. I mean, I think most teams are going to do pretty well that way, the good teams. But I mean, they aren't winning games where they aren't winning any slugfests. And this weekend, it was low scoring games against Mizzou that they weren't able to win. So hell, look at me, I'm calling Mizzou. Been sucked in. Thanks a lot, Jim. But
we're past the first reference.
I mean, there you go. But I'm not impressed by South Carolina, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Their best series win was College of Charleston, probably. Them, I mean, that or Kentucky, and neither of those are regional teams right now. I mean, they've lost. I mean, they still have that loss to Clemson on their permanent record, and
that's right.
Now they get this one. I mean, it's not an overwhelming resume at all.
And even Alex Destino, who's led the offense, he's been slumping a little bit lately, and I know he was dealing with a little bit of a thumb issue too.
Right, but he's 1-for-17 in league games.
Yeah,
I mean that's what the league is about. That's why if you want to go play in the Southeastern Conference, and you consider it the best conference in the country, which I think everyone who's not a Pac-12 fan has to acknowledge. Then you're going to have to get it done in league play. And like Ole Miss, we talked about how top heavy this league is and what's the best unranked SEC team. And I would give the nod to Ole Miss. We had them ranked 1 week. We've had Ole Miss, Mississippi State ranked previously, but they've lost their last 3 weekends.
Yeah, they haven't. Mississippi State hasn't actually won a regular series yet.
That's amazing. All conference tournaments.
Yeah, all those tournaments.
That's
Now they've lost 3 straight series.
But to me, I'm looking at a team like Ole Miss, and Sykes Orvis is a senior, and he was in Omaha last year, and he's got some physicality, and he got out of the blocks a little bit slow. But the last 2 weekends, he's played well for Ole Miss, and he's hitting in league play. And that's really kind of what's going to tell the tale for these teams. Again, Kyle Martin is hitting in league play for South Carolina. So you kind of expect your veteran players. Caldwell's a senior, we already mentioned. So you kind of expect that you hope as a coach that your veterans are going to be the guys who kind of lead you offensively. That's been the case for some of these clubs. But right now for South Carolina, they really kind of need some of those younger guys to grow up a little bit in league play. And it showed a little bit this weekend. Is there another team in the SEC that we haven't talked about? Ole Miss, we just talked about, as an unranked team. I think, Mike, you like Auburn a little bit, or they've shown you some signs. And Alabama, those are the other two teams I feel like in the SEC that aren't ranked that have kind of shown us something so far this year.
Yeah, and Auburn was a team that I liked preseason. Didn't necessarily think that they were a top 25 team, but saw them in the 25-30 range. I mean, when you have Keegan Thompson, I mean, he's an asset for them, and it's a team that's played a decent schedule so far. I mean, they won a game against Vanderbilt this weekend, which I think is an accomplishment in itself with how talented Vanderbilt is. And you know, I think they're a team right on the cusp. And Alabama was another group that we considered possibly putting into the mix as well. And I do like Ole Miss too. Like you're saying, I mean, I think, you know, Sykes Orvis is, like you said, he's been heating up, and you know, he has that plus mustache of his, which, you know, really takes things to another level.
You got to be old enough to grow one of those.
Yeah.
And then there's a little extra testosterone. That was my favorite part of the preseason photo shoot, was that Thomas Eshelman could not grow a mustache.
Yeah.
He had 2 weeks notice to grow a mustache, and it just couldn't happen for him. These were not problems that Fullerton players had 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, the SEC, I guess a couple other things on the weekend that jumped out to me, guys. Florida's only 3-3 in the league. We dropped the Gators down to 4 this week. You know, there's no shame in losing a series at Ole Miss, but I was curious if either of you guys had any concerns about them. And then Tennessee swept by Georgia at home. Tennessee and Arkansas are the 500 or below teams in the league, and Tennessee is the team that has become the bottom feeding school. Yeah, and Missouri has kind of... We'll see if Missouri can keep leaving them behind, but winning a series at home against South Carolina is a good start. So I'm pretty concerned about Tennessee, guys. I don't know what your take was there on the Gators, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I think the Gators will be fine. I was kind of seeing Shore and Puck get knocked around 2 days in a row is kind of...
Yeah, Shore's been knocked around a couple weekends
in a row. Yeah, 2 weeks in a row, yeah. I mean, he's given up, I think, what, 4 home runs the week before, and now another one to Ole Miss. But, I mean, you know, I think we have enough faith in the Gators that they'll figure it out. I mean, they did win that series against Miami, so they've proven they can beat quality teams. They beat Florida State on what was it, Tuesday, even though that was a pretty ugly game
for both teams.
Yeah, not one for the time capsule.
And another four plus hour game. But Florida State played some lengthy games this week. That was not for the faint of heart if you're watching Florida State.
Yeah, well, they grind it out.
When you walk that often, that's the thing that I've always said. Moneyball may be an effective drawn walks, three-run homers. That may be effective. It's not exactly exciting. Drawn walks, worst thing to watch in baseball. There's nothing less fun than drawn a walk. I'm sorry.
It's like the equivalent to Virginia or Wisconsin basketball, I feel like, in some ways.
I'm not on Virginia basketball. Tough weekend for Virginia. Tough weekend for Virginia athletically.
It was tough. There's no question.
But Florida, you know, they haven't, this is really their first time on the road, the first time out of the state of Florida this weekend at Ole Miss. They got to go to Missouri in 2 weeks. They've got Alabama this weekend, but I'll be interested to see how Florida, until they win something on the road outside the state of Florida, they kind of have to prove it. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how, especially early April at Missouri and Columbia, it could be cold. So we'll see. We saw Miami struggle in the cold. We saw some crazy snow pictures from Boston College this weekend.
Yeah.
NC State and BC got in 2 games, and the 3rd game canceled by predicted single-digit temperatures. So I'm not going to say hashtag push it back, because I don't believe that, but just not a good weekend to try to play baseball in Boston in the last week of winter.
And for Tennessee. I mean, so you just get swept at home by Georgia, and your next series is at Vanderbilt. Not that there's any easy series, but that's probably not one you want to see on the schedule.
You know, last year Tennessee won that series with Vanderbilt.
Did.
You know, it was a big deal. Dave Serrano talked about.
Yeah, we kind of thought that was a breakthrough moment for them.
Right. So they've lost their first 2 series at Florida, swept at home by Georgia. Now they go on the road for back-to-back series, and there's no relaxation in this league. We've talked about that a lot, but. If 3 of their next 4 series are on the road.
Yeah.
So you're already under 500. It's just going to be very, very difficult for them to dig out.
And when you add in that they've already lost series to FIU and Irvine, I mean, in the non-conference, it's the SEC, so you get plenty of opportunities to win quality series, but it's tough to map it out for them to get through to regionals this year.
It is. It's very difficult to map it out. I think that's very well said, and that's not what Dave Serrano wants to hear, but I think he knows that. I think he knows how tough it is to map that out. We should probably get close to wrapping up, guys. A couple other top 25 changes. We brought in Oklahoma State. We already talked about Cal. But Oklahoma State's a team that was ranked in the top 10 preseason, really had a very shaky start to the year. But for them, anything stand out to either of you guys about Oklahoma State, what they were able to accomplish this weekend and win that series against a TCU team that had played so well to this point?
Well, I mean, so they've been playing pretty well the last couple of weeks, but this is a big step up in competition. I think they swept, Alcorn State and Grand Canyon they'd kind of been beating up on. But now going to Fort Worth, I mean, that's obviously TCU is very good at home. They're suited to play in that ballpark with all their pitching and to beat, obviously they lost to Preston Morrison on Saturday, but to...
Except the win.
Yeah, no shame in that, and then to win the other 2 games, I mean, they get a complete game from Michael Freeman, I believe, yesterday, and, get a game-winning home run off Riley Farrell on Friday in extra innings. I mean, this has got to be a huge confidence boost. I mean, coming into the year, we kind of, they've done it a little bit differently. I think some of the veteran pitchers they had coming into the year have been... not quite lived up to it. That was kind of a big reason we kind of ran them up the rankings was all the guys they had back. But, to go to Fort Worth and get a series win to start off conference play when you figure that's probably the toughest series you'll have, to go out there, to start it up and get to come out there with 2 wins. I mean, that's a great way to get things started.
You know, last year, the thing for me with Oklahoma State, they had me have them fourth out of the Big 12, the four Big 12 teams that we ranked in the beginning of the year, was that, you know, Vince Whelan was their top winner last year out of the bullpen. They also lost, but they lost Brendan McCurry with his 19 saves. They had some churn in that pitching staff, and they also lost Zach Fish, who was their top home run guy. So you kind of looked at it and thought, okay, is this team going to have the same? Yeah, those guys were key elements to their team last year. They lost, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, Kreitmeier. I'm probably going to.
Kreitmeier.
Kreitmeier, thank you. There you go. So they lost their two top home run guys, two of their top bullpen guys. So you're kind of wondering, is this team going to be able to overcome that? But so far, Michael Freeman's been kind of the X factor here. This guy made one start all of last season. 6'8", junior college transfer from last season, gets his feet wet last year. Now as a senior, he's just pounding the strike zone. Usually hard for a tall guy to do that. Guy has 6 walks and 39 innings this year. He's been their best starter. It's impressive. You know, I think we all thought very highly of this coaching staff when Josh Holliday and company came in there and took over. And they're kind of showing what they're made of as a coaching staff this year. With, you know, maybe that early season soft schedule was somewhat by design. We certainly hit them hard for the losses to Oregon State, Arizona State, Auburn. They wound up falling out of the rankings, but it's hard to climb back in. Yeah, you lost to Illinois. That was the kind of the last straw for them. But hard to climb back in the rankings when you're playing Alcorn and Grand Canyon like they did last week. But great weekend for them this weekend against TCU.
And Garrett Williams still hanging around there, 17 Ks in 11 innings, just kind of.
If he ever throws strikes,
he gets enough strikes from him. Yeah,
that's it. I mean, the guy was a top 100 guy out of high school. And the reason he didn't get drafted wasn't so much. I mean, he's academically oriented. He was serious about college because I think he was a Vanderbilt commit originally, who decommitted and wound up at Oklahoma State. I think he followed Josh Holliday. But the reason he didn't get drafted, it wasn't like, oh, the Oklahoma State commitment. You can't take on Oklahoma State. It wasn't that with scouts. He just didn't throw strikes that year. So, and he hasn't in college consistently. But the arm has a chance to be special. And I'm looking at the rest of their schedule, guys. They have to go to Texas Tech, but the rest of their road series, they got the toughest one out of the way at TCU. They've got to go to Kansas in league play, Texas Tech, and then they end the season at Michigan, which is not in league play. I think it's doable for Oklahoma State to keep on keeping on. So very encouraging developments there. Last thing I'll ask you guys about, I like talking about the Big Ten. We have two ranked teams from the Big Ten in Indiana and Illinois. We could have brought in Nebraska. They had a big weekend this week. What are they, 17-6 for the Cornhuskers?
Haven't lost since leaving the Minute Maid.
A lot of power on that team.
Yeah, and the physicality and athleticism there. We did not drop Indiana, but I mean, Indiana, kind of a weird way for them to finish their weekend series. I think they had a 7-0 lead against Penn State and wound up losing that last game 13-7. And that's only Penn State's, I think, second win of the year. At the same time, that team's, they played a tough schedule, Penn State has, so I didn't really count that too much against the Hoosiers. And then Maryland had stumbled a little bit, Jim, but I know they're personal cheese ball of your team, and they sweep Minnesota. But, I mean, it feels like the Big Ten, I'm not sure how the RPI is going to work out for them, but so far, we came into the year talking about the Big Ten as a potential 3- or 4-bid league. They're still kind of hanging around that. To me, they look like that kind of league.
I think so. I mean, obviously we liked Maryland a lot coming into the year, and they haven't really had that one down weekend where they lost a series to UNC Wilmington, which is really, so that's not a bad series at all to lose. I mean, it was on the road, and other than that, they really haven't had any letdowns. I mean, they lost a game to UCF, I think it's the only top 25 team they've played, so that's kind of the knock on them, is they haven't really won a series against anyone great so far. But they've been strong. I mean, they're 17-4, and now they sweep Minnesota to start the year. And Mike Schworn's been pitching well at the front of that rotation. And you know, Willie Rios kind of got roughed up this weekend, which was a little surprising. I mean, it's a very talented freshman. They've kind of moved into the weekend rotation that we thought might happen at some point. He kind of sees that role a little faster than we thought. Maybe not for long, but the Gophers got seven runs and 2 innings against him, but Terps were able to come back and win that game. But
some consistency, it really feels like in the weekend rotation, feels like that's going
to
be
kind of, that was kind of the obstacle coming into the year, is what they would do after Schworn. I mean, they had a veteran lineup, a lot of guys back. You know, with Brandon Lau is a a real polished hitter at the top of the lineup. Jose Quas has some power. Nick Sirianni's got some power. Kevin Martyr, Anthony Papillon, all those are guys that have been there. The rotation was kind of a when you lose Jake Stinnett, and I feel like even on Sundays last year they were just kind of having to piece it together.
Right.
So it's still kind of we'll see where that goes. But I still believe in that team. I think I'm seeing who they get this weekend.
Jim, just don't stop believing, Jim.
No, I won't.
I had to throw that in there. I don't even like Journey, but I had to throw that in there.
I'm trying to see who they get. Who they've got coming up, but I expect they'll be back at some point. I mean, that's a quality club.
Yeah, and I like their bullpen. Kevin Mooney's the career saves leader there for the program. I like this league, Mike. I don't know if one of the teams there stands out for you in the Big Ten yet.
Well, one thing I was going to say is there's an intriguing midweek matchup this week as Indiana is going to take on Louisville.
Right,
Chris Lemonis against his. His former partner in crime, Dan McDonnell, which
absolutely.
Is going to be interesting from that standpoint, from the narrative standpoint, and then also from the standpoint that Louisville's obviously a very good team this year. So that should be a good test for them.
That's been a consistent, and that's how the Indiana program got to know Chris Lemonis as a candidate, is that playing the Louisville team consistently. And those
have been
played
in the postseason, too.
Those have been good midweek matchups and a nice Midwestern rivalry.
Yeah, that was it.
So I'm kind of... and speaking of that, if you're an Indiana fan listening, our next cover of our next magazine will have Kyle Schwarber on it, but not an Indiana
guard. Two-time cover boy now.
Mm-hmm. Second time. Hasn't even played a full season in professional baseball. Got a second cover. And this time he's in a uniform. So he does not have... he's not bearing his arms and chest. That cover got a little bit mocked in the scouting community. I'm not sure what they thought of this year's college preview cover, but the Indiana one kind of got mocked for Schwarber and Travis kind of looking all puffed up, kind of a Hans and Franz kind of cover. So I enjoyed it.
They weren't wearing puffy shirts, though.
No puffy shirts and no gray sweatshirts. I kind of enjoyed it, though. But we also have a question. We have we had an email to podcast@baseballamerica.com. I'm going to run this by you. From Paul Norwine, college baseball fan, who's located in Northwest Indiana. So first, Paul, even though you're a Purdue season ticket holder, which, good on you, that's fantastic. This is my first email ever from a Purdue season ticket holder, an admitted Purdue season ticket holder. So Iowa and Maryland come to West Lafayette, but those teams, we just talked about Maryland. Iowa's got some intriguing talent over there as well, so that's one you definitely want to watch. He went over and saw Kyle Cody against Moonlight Tatum on Sunday down in Kentucky and Mississippi State. And so that was one of his questions, what we thought of those two pitchers. Kyle Cody's off to an start. It really hasn't blown people's doors off. And Moonlight Tatum just kind of, I know you talked to the coaching staff down at Mississippi State about him, Butch Thompson, his pitching coach. It feels like Moonlight and that whole team at Mississippi State have backed up a little bit, but... do we think that that maybe the SEC is a little bit overrated, or do we feel like it's more that he saw Arizona State early in the year, that Arizona State was further ahead of those teams? I think, first of all, Arizona State's further ahead because they're in Arizona.
Yeah.
They should be further ahead because of the weather. They're just better, I would say, than Kentucky and Mississippi State. I mean, I think that they've shown that to this point. I don't know if you think – do you guys think the SEC – I don't feel like the SEC is overrated so much as that, like we've said earlier – it's really more the SEC is pretty top heavy, and the bottom teams in the SEC are going to be competitive. But I feel like there's some pretty decent separation between the top four teams in the SEC. Maybe South Carolina has a chance to be that fifth team. We certainly have them there now. But then the rest of the pack, I think there's a little bit of a gap. I don't know if you wanted to react to any of that, Jim, and then talk a little bit about what Iowa and Maryland have coming to West Lafayette for Paul, our Purdue season ticket holder.
It does feel like the SEC is a bit top heavy. I mean, you've got those top four teams plus South Carolina is kind of, we've talked about, I'm not sure what to make of them at this point. But then after that, I mean, Mississippi State, we've talked about them, they've dropped off. Alabama's a team we liked. They've lost a series to Houston. Now they lose to A&M. So no shame in that, but, we'll see where they end up. Auburn's got young talent, but they haven't put it all together yet. They were a base hit away from winning that series this weekend against Vandy in the last game, but where they stranded the bases loaded in the ninth inning. But Yeah, I mean, after that, I mean, Arkansas, you still kind of want to give the benefit of the doubt because they're always there. But, I mean, they've...
But not yet.
They have not proven it. They have not proven it.
They're not there yet, Jim. 11-11, and it's kind of getting down to time where you kind of wonder, what are they? You know, what's their identity?
And obviously Tennessee's been a disappointment. Georgia's not... we kind of thought Georgia might take a step forward this year. They've kind of struggled a little. They did win that series against Florida State, obviously, which is a big moment for them. Now they've kind of... Seems like they've kind of backed up a little bit. Other than that, I mean, it's, you know, Missouri is kind of on the way up, but we'll see where, I think we had, in the projection last week, we had 10 SEC teams in, if I remember right.
I think that's right.
Because we gave, they kind of gave Arkansas the benefit of the doubt, but the next time we do one of those, it'll probably be, if they haven't beaten somebody by then, they will not be in, because I think their RPI was definitely not very high, but,
Well, I'll jump in on the Purdue part. I will say I would definitely go see. You definitely want to go see Maryland. Maryland went to Super Regionals last year. They were our highest ranked Big Ten team coming into the year. We like their talent. We've talked a little bit about them. I was interesting, and I don't know that we're ever gonna. You know, again, we're talking about potentially four Big Ten teams coming into the being regional teams. I didn't even mention Iowa or Michigan. Michigan had two preseason All-Americans. Here's Iowa with, you know, some actual pitching talent. Calvin Matthews is off to a great start for them. He's an Iowa kid. Obviously, the whole state of baseball in the Hawkeye state has gotten a lot better because I think you have to give Perfect Game a ton of the credit there. They've just made – they are the baseball culture on the amateur side in the state of Iowa. But between Calvin Matthews, Tyler Payton, and Blake Hickman – you know, Iowa's got three juniors that they really like in their weekend rotation. They've pitched very consistently so far. Blake Hickman's probably been their worst starter today because he hasn't found the strike zone. He's a converted catcher in our top 100 college prospects. So, you know, potential first five rounds draft pick. So this has been a pretty good start to this. I think Iowa expected that this would be one of their best teams. So far, it has been, and I think it's built around their starting pitching. And
it's a veteran lineup, too.
But Rick Heller, to me, he's done tremendous work. He made Northern Iowa competitive, did a great job when that program got shut down, went to Indiana State. Now he's in his second year at Iowa. This guy knows the baseball culture in that state, and it's starting to show with Iowa's team. And again, this is also a state that's got Iowa Western's won, three of the last five junior college championships. He had nobody from the northern half of the country who'd ever won the NJCAA championship out in Grand Junction. And I think Iowa Western's done it three times in the last 5 years. So, you know, amateur baseball in the state of Iowa is on the come, and it's trickling up, really, from the ground, from the high school players from the state of Iowa who made the big leagues, like Ryan Sweeney and Jeff Clement. Matt McCree, I think, was briefly a big leaguer. I'm showing my age by naming all these guys from last century in high school baseball, like 2000, 2001 draftees. But it's trickling up from that level to the junior college level, now finally up to the D1 level. So I would definitely go see that Iowa team and compare them, Paul, to the rest of these teams that you've seen. So nice question from Paul Norwine, and kudos for being a Purdue season ticket holder and listening to the podcast. I definitely appreciate that. Any other teams facts from this week's top 25 you guys wanted to point out, and where might you guys be going this week? Jim, Mike, you got any plans already for this week?
I was looking at staying local for Miami's coming to town against Carolina, which
just won a series against Wake Forest. You're a Winston-Salem product, so they were in your home neck of the woods, and again, a series win for Miami. Yeah. They've been pretty robust offensively themselves so far this year, with the exception of that Florida series, really.
Right.
So they're coming to North Carolina. I think we had I forget who else was at home. Jim, are you going to be around here this weekend?
I expect so. Yeah, I'll probably go check out that series as well. I think I forget what the other series around here are. I think NC State is at home also, but I'll probably hit at least a couple games out in Chapel Hill. Well, that's gonna be an interesting series. I'm going to see if David Thompson can keep it going. He's been just killing the ball lately, so that should be interesting. And I mean, we probably would have. And you know, we talked about bringing UNC into the rankings this week if they hadn't lost to Davidson, which was kind of a crazy ending to that game that Mike caught there. But they're coming off a series win at Georgia Tech, which felt kind of like a bit of a circle the wagons weekend for them to go down there and win, where that was a place where they have not had much success historically. So we'll see where they come back and see if they can keep it going.
That was definitely big for That was big if true for North Carolina to win that series on the road, and one of the better. I love seeing all the college baseball highlights. They don't all have to be vines, Mike. You don't get all of them, but the one from the Georgia Tech of Connor Justice, hashtag personal cheeseball, going in the hole, making the jump throw. I do think he eventually is a separating factor for Georgia Tech. Their infield defense is outstanding. But I'll actually be heading to Florida this weekend for some spring training, going to a couple of Nationals games with my brother down on Vieira. And now I'm seeing that the Gators are home. They wrap up their series Saturday. I have tickets Thursday and Friday in Vieira, but I don't have anything to do Saturday. Saturday at 1 o'clock, maybe I'll go check out the Gators against Alabama. See a little Mikey White, little Richie Martin, little shortstop tete-a-tete. That could be fun.
That would be fun.
So, I mean, I've seen one college game in the state of North Carolina. When I add one to my one in Arizona and add one in the state of Florida to wrap things up. But and that could be a show. We have one late question I'll throw at you guys on Twitter from James Gilliam. Do we think South Carolina needs to change closers because Tyler Widener hasn't gotten it done in conference play? That's not an easy call, I don't think, to just up and change closers like that. I will say it does look like South Carolina has depth guys, and they have some options they could go to. Vince Fiore's been outstanding for them, kind of in a setup role in their relief. But you know, I think it's hard to change roles. If you're going to do it, now's the time because you do have you have a few weeks under your belt. I don't feel like Widener is the reason that they haven't gotten it done, but they did get some good innings this weekend out of Brandon Murray, the freshman out of the state of Indiana. He's got a good arm, good body. To me, Murray, Fiore, they have some options. Guys, I don't know if you guys have seen enough of South Carolina to really make that guess. You saw them in the wrap-up against Clemson, Micah.
I did.
What did you think? Did you get to see Widener? What's kind of your sense of the Gamecocks bullpen at this stage?
I didn't see Widener. I did see Fiore, and he did pitch well. The pitcher that stood out to me the most, but now he's starting for them, was Clark Schmidt,
right
out of the bullpen.
And they've already upped his role. Their coaching staff agreed with you and thought, let's move this guy into the rotation.
I thought stuff wise, he could have been a late inning reliever or a starter. Fiore can maybe fill that role possibly, but I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. I don't know if you. It's still early in conference play. I don't know if you move Widener off of that yet.
Cody Mincy was a guy who was important to them last year, and he took a loss this week in the midweek. He hasn't pitched well so far. So that's another guy who you can tell they wanted to have in the mix. Mm-hmm. And then Destino was a preseason third team All American for us as a two way player. Was much more buzz about him draft wise at a high school. On the mound, and he's made one appearance this year so far. I don't see them giving him an expanded pitching role, considering that he's, as we mentioned, 1-for-17 at the plate in two SEC series. Wasn't sure is there anybody else you want to throw into this mix, Jim? Because it seems like they have some options, but they're going to be taking from their strong middle relief core if they move Widener out of that closer role.
And the thing too with Fiore is he's kind of a pitchability lefty mid-80s. Kind of guy with a curve, but probably a guy you want to pick your spots with more lefty on left matchups versus having him be your
everyday
closer.
Guy.
I mean Widener hasn't been terrible. I mean he's got 21 strikeouts in 13 innings. I mean he's probably got the best arm of the guys they're considering there. I mean obviously Murray's got a power arm, but he's a freshman. I don't know if you want to. Move a veteran guy out there to put in a freshman, even if he's been, obviously threw very well this weekend. But
and it was more like an extended, five inning relief thing as opposed to one inning come out there and blow somebody away kind of appearance.
And getting Mincy going would be huge. I know he was a guy they were counting on a lot last year and coming into this year. So he's another, like we're saying with the offense, they're waiting some guys like, Schrock and some of those guys to get going. They need to. And Mincy's a guy they would like to get more out of.
But James Gilliam's our question asker, and I think I understand why James is looking for a change, because I'm just looking at Widener's numbers in league play, and he's given up 15 base runners, and he's gotten 16 outs. Mm. That's untenable for your closer to have that kind of a ratio. So I understand why there's impatience there from the fans. And then Manny Passaru will wrap with this. Manny's a long-time listener, first-time caller, I believe. First time I know how to pronounce his name because I tweeted at him and asked him. But Ole Miss, we mentioned Ole Miss, took two or three from his Gators. They had the number one strength of schedule. How close were they to top 25? Guys, I mean, like, it's hard. It was hard. It would have been hard to bring in a 13-10 team this week, but it does feel like Ole Miss, they have played the strongest schedule. It feels like a sweep and a 16-10 record would put them, if they're 16-10, 17-10 next week, they'd be on the cusp of getting into the rankings, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah, yeah, they haven't had, they really haven't given themselves any breaks. I mean, they've played a couple of good mid-majors at the start of the year in Wright State and William & Mary. They played at UCF. They've been at LSU. Now they
at Louisville in the middle of the week.
Yeah, at Louisville midweek. And yeah, I mean, other than, like I said, that one series with Stetson, but other than that, I mean, that's, they've been playing somebody tough every weekend, and now they go to it should be a desperate Arkansas team they're facing this weekend, so if they win that series, that's going to be a, you know, they'll, I mean, we'll see if there's space for them, but they definitely would have a strong case.
Feels like it's, again, it's very difficult. Every weekend in the SEC is tough, but the next 2 weekends, they're playing the teams that we just talked about that have the worst overall record in the league, and those teams are combined 20-22. And Arkansas and Ole Miss. So, Tennessee. So
yeah.
Ole Miss is going to Arkansas, home to Tennessee. Kind of feels like if they're not ranked after these two, that's
yeah,
it. If they're not tied after those 2 weeks, if they're not in the top 25, they're not going to be ranked probably for a while, because you expect them to try to get well against those teams, and then they have to go after that at Vanderbilt and then at Auburn. That's going to be a little bit tougher when you go at Vanderbilt in there. So, for me, Manny, I'm with you. I think we're impressed with Ole Miss. They're on the cusp of the top 25, and lots of good questions. We had good questions this week. The podcast at baseballamerica.com is the email address. If you want to be a little bit more newfangled, like Murray and James Gilliam were, you can tweet at us. I'm at John Manuel BA. Jim is at Jim Schoner BA. Mike is at M Lanana, one N, then two N's.
Yes.
Three total. At M Lanana. And if you haven't already joined Vine, you could just do that. Put that app on your phone. Just for Mike's Vine game. It remains strong. So Jim and I have something to learn there on our Vine game. So for those guys, I'm this guy. We'll see you on the next week. Baseball America podcast brought to you by Louisville Slugger. Until then, so long, everybody.